Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Jasmine Grace Marino, a mother of two who lives in Massachusetts and drives a minivan, once discovered she was being sold on Craigslist, where her trafficker was posting ads for her. She says, "It boggles my mind that you can buy a person and a used fridge on the same website." Jasmine Grace Marino is a survivor of sex trafficking and drug addiction. And we learn about her story in the short documentary, The Light. The film is part of Mimi Chakarova's documentary series Still I Rise, which tells stories of people overcoming adversity. Mimi Chakarova is a filmmaker, documentarian, and photographer based in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she joins us in studio. Hi, Mimi. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Great to see you.
It's great to see you and great to have you. We are also joined by Jasmine Grace Marino. She's founder of Bags of Hope Ministries, which supports women in Massachusetts, women who have been trafficked, addicted, women who've been homeless, and she is the author of The Diary of Jasmine Grace. Hi, Jasmine. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you, Jasmine. And I have to say, your story is just incredible. And thank you, Mimi, for making this story. And thank you, Jasmine, for sharing your story. Mimi, when did you first learn about Jasmine's story or first meet her? How did that happen?
So I have a wonderful colleague and someone I respect a great deal by the name of Bob Nicholsberg, who's a photojournalist and a war photographer. And he had been following Jasmine's story for 3 years. And when we launched the series Still I Rise, I reached out to him as well as a bunch of other colleagues who are doing interesting projects in the field. And Bob said, "You know, I know you've taken a break from work and trafficking, but there is this amazing woman who I've been following for 3 years and going back and forth and photographing her. And, you know, the nonprofit that she started to help other women. And, you know, you should take a look at some of these photos." And once I looked at Bob's photos and connected with Jasmine, I knew that this was the perfect fit for Still I Rise.
And Jasmine, like I said, your story is just so incredible. And I love how Mimi decided to film it, Mimi and her team, where you're talking to the camera for a good chunk of the 30 minutes, and then we see photos of your life and your family. Why did you decide to work with Mimi and share your story?
Yeah, well, I had been working with Bob, like Mimi said, and Bob had been following me around because, you know, one of Bob's biggest thing was always, "I want to document your story, but I can't go back in the past." So, you know, he followed me around to so many events and things that I was doing today and what's my life look like today. And with those photos, I thought something good could come out of it, really for someone else's benefit. You know, it's the whole point of the story of survival is to help others heal and realize that they're not alone. And so when the option came up to work with Mimi, I thought, okay, this might be a good idea. And I took a chance because my kids were going to be in the film, and to me that is very private and personal, but I took a risk, and I think they did a beautiful, really wonderful, amazing job. So I'm really grateful for the way that it turned out.
How did your kids respond when they saw the film?
They haven't yet.
My they haven't.
Still small, but they definitely have been around every time Bob was there, and then when Mimi's crew came to do the film. So, like little hams, very funny. and they also think I'm like famous, which is really funny. So it's good. And in time, you know, they know my story very age appropriately. So
right.
As time goes on and they get older, I can explain more, and they can read the book and watch the film. Have conversations then.
Right. Of course, that would make sense. Now that I see your kids in my mind, it definitely is not appropriate for them yet. And Mimi, trafficking is not new for you, because we had you on to talk about your other incredible film, The Price of Sex. It's a feature-length documentary about young Eastern European women who've been drawn into sex trafficking and abuse. And if I remember correctly, it's been a while since we had you on, but you actually went undercover into some of these places to find out what was really happening.
I did.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it took 7 years and then another 3 years to travel with the film and make the film. So it took a decade of my life, and I made this promise that I would step away from trafficking until Jasmine came along. And then I returned because, I'll tell you something, what's incredibly special about Jasmine is not only the honesty and the way she conveys her story, but it's also the fact that she has turned this trauma and this pain into something positive and something that leads to action by helping other women. So instead of a lot of trafficked women I interviewed through the years, there comes a point when they just want to stop talking about it and they want to stop reliving that experience. And they want to stop answering these questions and they want to move on with their lives. So to find a survivor who says, you know what, this is my mission. My mission is to help other women and to prevent this from happening to other women is remarkable. Mm. So finding her was a gift, and it was, I mean, I really encourage people to see the light.
And you can see it online. We have a link at yourcallradio.org. Where does that come from, Jasmine? Because you have written a book about your experience. You run this organization that we'll talk about, Bags of Hope Ministries, where you pass out 1,000 bags a year filled with basic necessities, toiletries, hair ties, that kind of thing, to women in Massachusetts. And I was checking you out on social media. You're constantly going to conferences, giving talks. I mean, this has really become your life's mission. Where does that drive come from?
Yeah, so for the first 5 years of recovery, I didn't know I was a survivor. So my trafficking experience happened. I was trafficked under my trafficker for 5 years. Once I finally got out from him, drug addiction and more prostitution became my lifestyle because I had no coping skills. I believed that's all I ever would be and all I could ever be. I knew I was changed from the inside out, my identity. I had no worth. I just had no, felt like no other options. And so for another 3-4 years, that became my life. And then I had to get clean and sober or die. Like, there's no option. If you know anyone in drug recovery or addiction, there's no options. Like, you either die or you get sober. And finally, I got clean and sober in 2007. And for those first 5 years, I stuffed very deeply the prostitution / trafficking piece because it was too shameful to talk about. And I just wouldn't want to go there until I got married. And in my marriage, everything surfaced. Everything bubbled up, and I couldn't do the intimacy and the trusting and the vulnerability that it takes to be in a marriage. And he had some stuff going on too, and just putting us together was very messy and complicated. And we separated. Within that separation, I sought deeper healing because I knew I was a mess, but I still didn't know what I needed to fix. I just knew I can't do this. And I sought deeper healing, and really it's through my faith. I found the Christian faith early on in my recovery, and my walk with God has really been my anchor through everything. I don't know how I could even do all this stuff without having something as secure as my faith. And so that really brought about the deeper healing. And I didn't know I was healed. You know, I just knew I was on a mission to, like, help and give back. And I didn't know where it was coming from. And I was volunteering for organizations that worked with trafficking women, and just all this trafficking stuff kept popping up. And one night I got invited to a meeting, and there was some women there, and they were talking about the work they do. And this woman goes into strip clubs and makes friends with the dancers, so when they're ready to exit the commercial sex trade, she's available to help them recover. And I had to raise my hand to tell her that I shared the same story and I wanted to help. And she referred me to an organization in Boston that hires survivors to be mentors to at-risk girls, because she told me I was a survivor. And so that's when everything changed. So really, the healing from the deep shame was lifted off. I had a new identity. I was no longer looking through the lens of a victim, but now I was a survivor. And I was being empowered and encouraged, and I saw all the amazing work survivors were doing across the nation, and I just felt so encouraged, and I didn't feel alone anymore. And I knew there was power in that message, and all my pain was now being used for a purpose. And that's really what drives me and keeps me going.
You know, that really struck me in the film, Jasmine, when you talked about meeting that woman, when she told you, you're a survivor, you're amazing, and everyone in the room started to clap. And you said, my mind was blown, I couldn't believe it. Everything changed from there. I was a survivor. Can you talk more just about the power of that word, those words, you're a survivor?
Yeah, because what traffickers do really is manipulate and coerce and brainwash so deeply into making you believe you make the choice to be a prostitute. You know, like, he made me really believe that I chose that, that I really wanted to do that, and that he was really my boyfriend and he loved me and we were going to have homes and businesses and children and all this stuff. And I got into it so naively and believing, because I was searching for love, right? And he told me he loved me, and I really thought I loved him. And it's linked to your identity in such a deep way. And when that's what you start doing, I don't care if you do it for 2 days or 10 years, being a prostitute does such deep damage, and it's not empowering. It's not anything glamorous. It's such a lie, and really, everything comes out of that sense of being a victim, because you're victimized over and over and over again.
Right.
And there's no empowerment in that. When you're a victim, your mind is just twisted, you know, and you can't relate. It just does so much damage in interpersonal relationships, and the shame is so deep. So that word survivor just lifts you up and brings you to a whole nother level that you never even thought of, because now all of a sudden, oh, this was done to me. That accountability has to be put on the perpetrator.
And Mimi,
I don't have to carry that anymore.
When we're talking about the trafficker manipulating women, what about how society deals with this issue? Because it's definitely gotten better over the last decade, where the women were the ones that were arrested and shamed. And that has changed in many cities across the country. The film, Still I Rise, I should say your series, is described as a series that shatters stereotypes and honors those striving for dignity and justice. Given the work you have done with The Price of Sex, and now this film about Jasmine, what stereotypes are you hoping to address when it comes to sex trafficking?
Well, it's the shame, and it's this perpetual, it's my fault, I'm going to be quiet, people are going to judge me, people will just think of me as a prostitute, and not realizing everything that happens along the way. And I don't care if you're doing international reporting or domestic reporting on trafficking, the equation and the pattern is the same. So when you hear Jasmine's story and she tells you how she met her trafficker, and he bought me a drink, and I thought, oh my God, I'm special. He took me to the shopping mall and he bought me, you know, nice things to wear, and I thought, that's my boyfriend, he loves me. This is something that you hear in every culture, in every place I've reported, and I've reported in a lot of places about this. It's the same pattern of manipulating a young girl and making her believe in this dream, and then, you know, selling her this fake dream, and forcing her into a lifestyle she doesn't want to participate in. Once she comes out, there are deep feelings of shame and deep feelings of, you know, if I tell someone what really happened to me, my family will disown me. In a lot of cultures, you know, that's what happens. And, you know, how do you live with that? So that's what I mean by shattering stereotypes. I think with The Price of Sex, showing the women's faces was a really big deal, because until then, you know, you just never showed the faces of survivors, because for a variety of reasons, but one was that shame. And I refused to be a part of that. I felt like these are real women. And like, what struck you with Jasmine is that interview. You know, right. You said you're watching this, and because she's talking to you and she's talking to every single viewer watching this film. Mm. And it's like sitting on the couch with a friend and having this discussion about, hey, this is what happened to me. And this is what I've learned, and this is what you can do to prevent this from happening to somebody else.
Mm. And Jasmine, what stereotypes would you like to address? Stereotypes people have against survivors of trafficking, for example, or even addiction?
Yeah, a lot of people, when they see me today, they can't believe that is really my story. I don't know what stereotype or what images they have in their mind of what they think a survivor or trafficking victim looks like, but they never think it's me, especially driving around, like I said, in a minivan with my children. They would just never imagine that that was me. And then also the stigma around prostitution. You know, like, drug addiction has a giant stigma, and that's still, like, and I mean, it's accepted a bit and talked about in society today, of course, because of the opioid epidemic, but prostitution, like, that's still severely stigmatized, and it's because of the shame. And I think that's the stereotypes that I'm trying to break and talk about. And also, I'm tired of a culture that totally objectifies and women and normalizes sex and sex for sale and prostitution. They think, oh, it's between two consulting adults. That's a consenting adult. That's okay. And, you know, really, I don't believe that's true. You know, I know there are some sex workers out there that say that they do this, but really, something's broken. Something's not okay. And it just creates inequality. And the demand is another thing that has to be talked about, because if there wasn't such a demand, there wouldn't have to be such a supply.
Hey, Jasmine, I want to add something to what you just said, because mm-hmm. in the film you talk about how, you know, when you were little, you were watching Pretty Woman, and how none of it corresponded with the reality of you know, being prostituted. And in Eastern Europe, when I would interview girls, that was their favorite movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's usually it would be the first movie, the first American movie they had ever seen was Julia Roberts, and, you know, and it's the idea of what are we showing the world, and what, you know, again, how are we conveying? Glamorizing prostitution, glamorizing, you know, poverty and desperation as well.
Right.
Mimi Chakarova is a filmmaker, documentarian, and photographer based in the San Francisco Bay Area. Her series of short films is Still I Rise and In the Light. We meet Jasmine Grace Marino, a mom of two who lives in Massachusetts and drives a minivan, and she shares her trafficking and addiction story in the film, and you can find a link to the film, and you can also see a photo of Jasmine at yourcallradio.org. She is the founder of Bags of Hope Ministries. They support vulnerable women in Massachusetts. They hand out 1,000 bags full of necessities every day, and she's also the author of The Diary of Jasmine Grace. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. If you work on this issue, on trafficking or in the sex trade, what questions do you have about surviving and how to support survivors? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. And did I say 1,000 bags a day? I meant 1,000 bags a year. Jasmine, I wanted to talk about your upbringing. I mean, everybody obviously has a story. And in the film, The Light, you talk about how your mom struggled. Jasmine, how your mom struggled with mental illness and your dad worked a lot to provide for the family. And so you talked about what happened in middle school, how you started drinking, taking drugs, being with older boys. You didn't know that, you know, how to get love. Can you just talk about how that affected you as a child?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those early and formative years that are so important as a baby and growing up, my mom just really struggled to take care of herself, and she wasn't able to really care and nurture like I needed. And I just didn't receive that love and that connection. And so I really feel like kids that are abused from a young age or witness domestic violence or substance abuse in their home, like, you know, something just doesn't connect inside. And again, it's all linked to our worth. And we just become vulnerable in different ways and at different degrees. And for me, really, I really never realized this growing up, obviously. But as an adult and exiting trafficking and drug addiction, obviously I've done a lot of reflection, a lot of healing. I can just see how I just didn't have any family support. I didn't have anyone to help me process things, help me work out life, no one to help lead or guide me into making wise decisions. You know, no one talked about plans for the future, college, nothing like that. And so I was just really out there alone and looking for the answers and when you're out there alone, you find your answers. For me, it was on the street, right? We didn't have YouTube back then. So my heart really goes out to those kids that are just out there alone without any really good supports in their lives, and they're being just fed lie after lie and really easily manipulated into doing things they don't want to do.
You also said, and I think this is really important, that no one educated you about how to respect your body or be in relationships with boys.
Mm-hmm. Right, because my mom wasn't very, you know, positive. You know, she didn't have any, again, she really struggled with her own stuff. And so I had no idea. I had no idea how to take care of myself in that way, to love and respect my body. I didn't think I was worth anything. And so boys could just easily talk me into doing things. And I think I've mentioned spelling love, S-E-X.
Right.
Right, because I didn't know. And then if I didn't give them to them, they took it. So I was raped at least twice by the time I was 14. And so experiencing that sexual violence at a young age and not having anyone to help me support that or work it out, you just carry on. You just plug on more shame. And my path was very broken.
Wow. By the time you were 14, did you have anyone to talk to at school about this?
No, I felt very isolated, very alone. I mean, I had lots of friends and I was very, like, social, but I would never talk about it. And plus, for something inside of me, I think I always felt like it was my fault. Hmm. You know, I took a lot of the blame.
And you grew up in an Italian family in the suburbs of Massachusetts?
I totally did, yes.
Wow. You know, Mimi, when I was hearing Jasmine talk about this, having no one to educate her about how to respect her body, I was just thinking about how important this is to provide in school. Because you hear the conservatives often say, you know, this needs to happen at home. Well, not everyone has that at home. A lot of people don't have that at home. And it's why it's so crucial to have open dialogue and these kinds of programs in schools for people like Jasmine. When
absolutely.
She was younger. And even today, yeah, it's still
absolutely.
Happening.
And I think that's the purpose and the reason for creating the series, too. I mean, we're creating it and making these short documentaries. This is also why they're short, because we realize that a lot of young people are not going to watch a 90-minute film. So if we keep it to 20 minutes to half an hour, this is something that can be shown in schools. And really, you know, paved the way of, hey, people have been through this. And here's what you got to watch out for. And, you know, and you can reach out. You know, I mean, Jasmine is running this incredible nonprofit. So they're resources and they're people. They're people like her you can reach out to and say, you know, someone is offering me X, Y, and Z. You know, is that a wise thing to do? I remember being in Harlem talking to young girls in this school, in this public school for girls, about trafficking, and they were so informed. They knew so much about what was going on, you know, because it's all about awareness. You know, it's all about, you know, it's the information, giving these kids the right information. But I have to say the right information, not the wrong stuff.
Right. And are you able to show this film in high schools?
Not yet, but we will. We will. That's the plan.
Wow. Yeah. What has it been like? So the price of sex has been shown in schools?
Oh, absolutely. And colleges throughout the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Jasmine, before we go to break, what are your thoughts? Do you have any stories, I'm sure you do, about talking with young people about your experience and how did they respond?
Yeah, I've spoken to girls in middle school. I don't think any younger than middle school. I've done like Bags of Hope events with like second graders, but it was more about drug addiction and homelessness, obviously, again, age appropriately. But really, those middle schoolers and high schoolers that I've talked with, middle schoolers have definitely identified. So many I've done events for, and the young girls will come up to me after, you know, with tears streaming down their face, telling me, yeah, that happened to me, or my mom was a prostitute and she got murdered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, have these really powerful stories that these young girls are dealing with and facing, and you know, you'd have no idea unless you're starting to have these conversations, and then they feel led to open up because all of a sudden they don't feel judged, they don't feel alone, they have somebody that can identify with them, so it opens the door.
Wow. Jasmine Grace Marino tells her story in the new short film, The Light. She is a sex trafficking and drug addiction survivor who has created a nonprofit that helps women in Massachusetts affected by trafficking, prostitution, addiction, and homelessness. It's called Bags of Hope Ministries. She also gives talks across the country, and she's the author of The Diary of Jasmine Grace. We're also joined by Mimi Chakarova, a filmmaker and documentarian in the San Francisco Bay Area, and her series of short films is Still I Rise. The Light is the latest, and you can find a link to the film, yourcallradio.org. And I also hope you can take the time to watch The Price of Sex. You can find more information about that, priceofsex.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with Akemi Johnson about her new book, Night in the American Village, Women in the Shadow of U.S. Military Bases in Okinawa. The United States has 32 military bases on the Japanese island. She explores the wounds of U.S.-Japanese history and the cultural and sexual politics of the U.S. military empire. I hope you can join us for that tomorrow. Today, we are joined by Mimi Chakarova, a filmmaker and documentarian based in the San Francisco Bay Area. Her series of short films is Still I Rise. They tell stories of people overcoming adversity. And in the short documentary, The Light, we meet Jasmine Grace Marino. She is a survivor of sex trafficking and drug addiction. And she's the founder of Bags of Hope Ministries. It's a nonprofit that helps women in Massachusetts affected by trafficking, prostitution, addiction, and homelessness. She's also the author of The Diary of Jasmine Grace, and she travels across the country telling her story. If you have any questions for Mimi or Jasmine about sex trafficking and survivors, what it takes, where we are right now on this issue, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Jasmine, can you spend a little time talking about how you got connected with this trafficker and then how you found yourself? You talked about going to this room, you know, being there for an hour, being so horrified, and, you know, men coming in, spending about $60 an hour. I think what's so powerful about this is when we hear about trafficking, I think a lot of people think of it as women coming to the United States from other countries, and you don't really hear about the details, especially with someone who lives in the United States, you know, grew up in this suburb of Massachusetts. So can you walk us through just how that happened?
Yeah, how I met my trafficker. Again, I was on a broken path. You know, I was drinking and partying at a young age. I was attending often this nightclub that was in my area that had an under 21 Friday or Saturday night, and I would go all the time. And of course, I would have a fake ID and go into the over 21 side. And I was just very vulnerable and broken, and knew I didn't want to be a prostitute. That wasn't my dreams and goals. Of course, I was a hairdresser. I was going to community college, but inside, I was just very vulnerable and needing love, I guess, and acceptance. And he meets me at the club, and he offers to buy me a drink, and he brings me to the bar, and he spends $7 on me, and I was automatically impressed because, you know, he was handsome, he was good looking, he had diamond jewelry and a lot of money in his hand, and I was like, okay, who's this guy? You know, he wasn't that much older than me. He was maybe a year or two older, and I never dated a guy or hung out with a guy like that, so I was intrigued. And we exchanged phone numbers and got together a few days later, and when he showed up, you know, he drove a really nice Mercedes-Benz, and again, he was handsome, and he had all this materialistic stuff, and there was no red flags either. Like, right away, if I had been, you know, educated and made aware of these things, obviously a 21-year-old dude driving a Mercedes-Benz and wads of cash is most likely a drug dealer. But I didn't even, like, think of that. You know, and again, where I grew up, and I guess just the people I hung out with and maybe the culture around me, just, like, that's glamorized and accepted. You know, having all that money and all that stuff was, like, awesome. And so I didn't think anything of it.
And can I just point out, one of the things you noted in the film is that Your trafficker was not a trafficker before he coerced you. He was a drug dealer, and he also dealt in weapons. But you said that it's easier in some ways to sell a person than drugs, because if you get pulled over, there are the drugs or the weapons, but there's no immediate evidence of a crime when you're selling a person.
Exactly. For many complex reasons and trauma-related reasons, you know, we're not going to self-identify and tell the cop that we're trafficking victim. You know, those words aren't going to come out of our mouth. And it's so much easier to hide. And we're trained to be quiet, to look away, to be loyal.
You know,
we're never rat.
I think this is important, Jasmine, because I cringe when we do shows about domestic violence, or when I hear this in the wider conversation. Why didn't you just leave? You hear that over and over again. And luckily now, so many women have been able to tell their stories about why they didn't leave. How would you answer that question? I mean, I don't like it, but I'm sure a lot of people ask. You were sent to a massage parlor in Hartford, Connecticut. You had to change your name. Why didn't you just run away?
Again, because of that coercion and manipulation, and thought that he loved me and that I loved him and that everything would be okay. And also trauma. You know, your brain isn't thinking correctly. The first time I had to exchange myself, yes, I was horrified and disgusted, but I just, out of survival, my brain shut off, so I wouldn't have to access that. And then once, you know, the violence started and he started to put his hands on me, everything changes. Then you're frightened. And when someone has a gun or, you know, tells you they're going to use it, you believe them. And when someone starts putting their hands on you, everything changes. And then you add the shame for what you're doing with your body. You're a dirty prostitute. No one will ever love you. And this cycle continues. And I did try to escape from him so many times. But every time he would come and find me and badger me and manipulate me and cry and promise he wouldn't hit me again. You know, and that cycle just continues.
Right. Mimi, what are your thoughts about that? I even hesitate to ask, but I think it is important because people wonder, why didn't you just run away? Or
I've been asked that question so many times, and it drives me crazy because it's. I've interviewed so many young girls, and you have to know everyone's story. You have to know, and you have to go deep as well. Mm-hmm. And the three questions, there is a lot of questions, but the three main questions I would focus on asking a young woman would be, were you ever sexually abused as a child? Mm-hmm. Usually the answer is yes. The second question would be, did you ever have dreams? When you were a little girl, what did you want to be? And the answer is never, I wanted to be a prostitute. It's never been. And I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of women who were trafficked. And then, you know, the third question, or it's more of a fact, is, at what age were you trafficked, or at what age did you join prostitution? At what age did you become a sex worker? And were you involved in the sex trade? And the answer is between 12 and 13. Wow. So if that's the age that you're dealing with, how much of it is a choice?
Wow.
Seriously, how much of it is a choice? If you were raped as a kid, you know, Jasmine, you went through this at the age of 14. So now here comes this guy who a few years later says, you can get paid for this, for something that was already being taken away from you for free. So, I mean, so that's what we talk, when we talk about trauma, you have to understand these girls' stories to really understand why they didn't run away, you know?
Right.
Jasmine, what would you add to that, given now all of the other interactions you've had with other survivors? What do you hear from them?
Yeah, I mean, even prostitution research says that 80 to 90% of women in the commercial sex trade were sexually abused as children. So again, that dial's already been turned, and it's linked right to their identity and their worth. And then if they're running away from abusive homes or foster homes and they're getting into the commercial sex trade, 12, 13, 14 years old, it just becomes so normal and so hopeless, and you really literally think that's all you're ever going to be. But so many women I've talked to, you know, were sold by their own mothers or traded for drugs, prostituted by their mothers. Their fathers were their pimps. I mean, so this can run really deep, and yes, there's a whole long story behind there. No one just wakes up one day and decides to do this. There's all different types of factors that gets us into these situations.
Wow, how common is it for a parent to traffic their own child? Do you run into this regularly?
Yeah, it's very, very common, more common than you think. Familial trafficking is a real thing.
Wow. This also just speaks to the fact that society has just failed these families. Mm. Out of desperation, whether they're addicted to drugs or they can't make ends meet. I mean, there's just many layers here.
Yeah, it does not happen in a vacuum, for sure.
Right.
But it's also the locations where sex is being purchased. So we're talking about a massage parlor, and Jasmine, you can add to this and tell us more. But, you said it's in the financial district, right? A busy location, you see men coming and going, and that's not raising a red flag for anyone?
This is a financial district in Hartford, Connecticut?
Yeah, where I was the first time with massage parlor in business, 25-something years, right there. People, either they look in a blind eye or just have no idea what's going on behind closed doors. Because, again, there's really not a street presence of prostitution around the country like it used to be years ago. It's been pushed indoors. Mm. And so people really have no idea. And when it was on the streets, people just, again, thought, oh, those girls want to be that way. Or they're choosing that or, I don't know.
How old were you when you went to that massage parlor?
19.
You say that in the lounge area when you walk in, there are about 10 to 12 women. And then you were showed around. A man comes in and pays a door fee, about $60 an hour. You talked about your first encounter with a man, an older man, and you say that he always wanted the newest girl, and he knew that there was a new girl every week. So this tells us that there's a lot of girls just coming in and out of that particular massage parlor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that massage parlor isn't in business anymore. But it was for a long time, like I said. And yes, they're regulars. Sex buyers become regulars, and they attend every week. And yeah, they're always looking for their newest girl, or some of them are regulars, and they do. They have their favorite or their girl they always see. And, they come in on that day. They know she's working and would see her specifically, for sure.
Were you able to have any conversations with the other girls? Or was that even in your mind at the time?
You know what? We were all just trying to survive.
Right.
So we never had conversations. And we were never in a space mentally or emotionally to have, deep conversations about anything. And also, we're pitted against each other because we're all trying to make the most amount of money because we all have a quota to make. All of us are dealing with different pressures from our traffickers. Some of us are on drugs. Some of us aren't. So we didn't have... You didn't have that space to have deep conversation, but there was some connection made with the ladies because you spent so much time with them working in these places. I'd come in with black eyes, I remember, and they wouldn't say anything to me. No one would ask any questions, but they would teach me how to put this special kind of makeup on to cover the black eyes.
Wow.
Because they already knew how to do that. So I remember being in the back room in front of the mirror, and they, oh, you need this type of foundation, and this is really thick. And it will cover it, and I have this girl putting on this stuff on my face. So they would hide the bruises so the sex buyers wouldn't see.
And for your first 3 days there, you were there from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m.?
Yeah. And it was musty, and it was dark, and it was sticky, and it was just gross.
Mm. So that was when you were 19. How long ago was that, if you don't mind me asking?
38 now.
Okay. So about 20 years ago.
Wow.
Given the work that you do now, traveling across the country, you run this organization in Massachusetts, you've written a book. If the demand was so high back then, 20 years ago, what is it like today?
You know what? I don't know if the demand has gotten any worse, but it's gotten a lot more easy to purchase sex because of the internet. And you really don't see as many American massage parlors anymore. You'll see more Asian massage parlors. Of course, I'm from Massachusetts. You've heard the whole Robert Kraft story down in Florida with the Asian massage parlors. I can't say if those women were trafficked or not. I obviously have really no idea, but it's most likely they were. Those are so common, Asian massage parlors. They're everywhere. And the internet, you've heard about Backpage being busted and being held accountable for so many minors being exploited on their website. But now it's led to more websites popping up, or the dark web, and it's happening. And sadly, the sex buyers want younger and younger girls too, is what I'm seeing a trend in.
What are your thoughts, Mimi?
I would say I completely agree. I think the younger the girl, and this is again not only in the United States but in other countries as well, the younger the girl, the more money people are paying for her. So a lot of these girls are kids, and speaking of massage parlors, I mean, here in San Francisco, it's the massage parlors and the women who work there, the Asian women who work there, a lot of them are trafficked, and there have been multiple investigations and places getting shut down and then being reopened again. So it's a pattern, and the demand, that's what I was going to say earlier. You have a supply of vulnerable, broken, sexually abused kids. But there is the other side of that equation, which is the demand. And unless you change the mentality of those who purchase women and girls and boys as well, unless you change their mentality, this is not going to end. It's not going to stop. So you need to fight this on two different levels. It's not just enough to raise awareness about here's what happens to a girl and how she perceives her body and the shame and the stigma and everything else that comes after the trafficking experience, but it's also about who are the people purchasing these women, and how are they not thinking that, hey, she probably doesn't want to do this right now. You know, how do you convince yourself that this is someone, a willing participant, and you can just pay $60 and get what you want and then leave and continue returning to the same establishment week after week? We have to change that. And you know, we have to do more work surrounding the men who purchase women.
Today we are speaking with Mimi Chakarova. She is a filmmaker and documentarian in the San Francisco Bay Area. Her series of short films is Still I Rise. They tell stories of people overcoming adversity. And in the short film, The Light, we meet Jasmine Grace Marino. She is a survivor of sex trafficking and drug addiction. She's the founder of Bags of Hope Ministries, which supports women in Massachusetts, and she's the author of The Diary of Jasmine Grace. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts about sex trafficking and prostitution? There is a very, well, it's a lively debate right now about the legalization of prostitution. There's a bill in New York that would do that, and a number of people are trying to ask the presidential candidates about that, and I'll ask Jasmine and Mimi about that in just a couple of minutes. But if you have any questions for them, any comments about sex trafficking and prostitution, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We have an email from Alicia. She says, I work as a counselor at a local school, and I have reason to believe that one of our students may be a victim. She's 19 years old, so she cannot be referred to CPS. Can you suggest resources I could give her and how to approach it since she refuses to have any direct conversations? Jasmine?
Yeah, I would say the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, there's a national hotline. It's ran by the Polaris Project. I would give them a call or go onto the website and check about some resources. And if she refuses to have direct conversation about it, just at least give her some resources and some phone numbers and some hotlines to call if and when she's ever ready or needs to.
And Alicia, the film is available to watch right now online. You don't need a special link, and you can find it at yourcallradio.org. What suggestions do you have, Mimi?
Just give this young lady as much information as you can without any judgment, which I'm sure you don't, as a counselor, you're not having that, but just give her as much information and have her make her own decisions. And having those hotlines and those numbers would be really helpful when she's ready, because she might not be at that point.
Mm. Well, thank you for calling in, Alicia. I hope that helps. And again, you can find links at yourcallradio.org. I wanted to ask you both about these movements to decriminalize prostitution. There is a bill in New York, and like I said, a number of people in the sex worker community are trying to get the Democratic presidential candidates to talk about this. Jasmine, what are your thoughts on this? I saw on your social media that you posted a video from a number of women who've been trafficked in Nevada who are opposed to decriminalizing prostitution.
Right. So I'm not in favor of full decriminalizing prostitution, because then it is just a complete open normalization of the commercial sex trade and doesn't hold pimps, traffickers, or sex buyers accountable. What I am in favor for is partial decriminalization, where we stop arresting the women that are found in prostitution, but still go after and criminalize the traffickers, the brothel owners, the sex buyers, because they're the ones who need to be held accountable, and these women that are being forced into the commercial sex trade need exit services. They need lots of support, lots of services to exit, to rebuild their lives. They don't need criminal records and tons of felony charges. What they need is rehabilitation and ways to rebuild their life. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a sign-on letter that survivors have written, and there's over 250 signatures that is pleading with the presidential candidates who are talking about full decriminalization of us survivors, that think that shouldn't be on the table, it shouldn't even be a discussion, that we're not in favor of it. And that is on my social media. And then there's also another letter that's been written by non-survivors, which we call them our allies, and these people who work, you know, with survivors and victims, and they wrote a letter in support of the survivor letter, so you can also sign on that way.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've heard the arguments in favor of decriminalizing prostitution. We've had guests on our show who favor it, saying that exactly what you're talking about with the partial decriminalization, that they are tired of being arrested. They're tired of the treatment that we have seen in all parts of the country, although that's getting a little bit better in some cities now. And they say that it would just bring it out from underground, and it would make it safer for women and girls. What's your response to that?
You know, I know, and I get that argument, and I know there's a lot of gray area, and I understand that. But at the end of the day, for me, and so many of us that have survived the commercial sex trade, we know that sex just shouldn't be for sale. If that you have to pay somebody to have sex with you, they really don't want to have sex with you. So it's really not consensual, and that it's a fallacy, and it's a lie, and it does soul damage, and it takes so many years to recover. And that prostitution is not a profession. It never was. And I don't know who said it was, but it's just not. And it just shouldn't be.
We just have got an email from Melissa who says, thank you for this program, Jasmine and Mimi. She especially wants to thank you. She says the New York decriminalization bill was just defeated, as were two attempts to decriminalize in the Bay Area, 2005 in Berkeley, 2008 in San Francisco. She says only women should be decriminalized. Sex buyers and traffickers should be criminalized. What are your thoughts on this, Mimi, given all of the experience that you have in interviewing directly, talking with women who've been trafficked?
So I'll give you what I know also on a global level. That you take the countries that have legalized prostitution, countries like Germany, countries like Turkey, Australia, the trafficking numbers did not go down. Women who were trafficked and sold against their will, it continued to exist. It was actually very hard to find them, but those brothels and red light districts continued to not only have the legal brothels, but also have women locked up in apartments and basements and so on. From everything I've read and all the people I've spoken with throughout the years, everyone quotes the Swedish model, you know, the model in Sweden, which is exactly what Jasmine was talking about. Do not treat the women as criminals, but really go after the Johns and really go after those who are trafficking the women and the madams and brothel owners. Those are the people who you should really kind of investigate and go after, not the women. Mm.
Final thoughts from you, Jasmine. What are your plans in the next couple of months? I mean, what else are you doing to share your story and get the word out?
Yeah, for the summer months are good because we get a little bit of a break. And then the fall, lots of conferences are already working, you know, to get prepared. And I'm speaking in New York and Vermont and traveling around, continuing to spread awareness, working with the women that, you know, we find through the giving out the bags or the groups that we run. So we mentor and walk alongside many women and support them. And that's tough. I mean, I have one woman right now that's in crisis, and she's trying to leave her trafficker, and she's in another state, and he's, you know, in another state calling her, trying to coerce her to send him money, and she's trying to leave. And she, my phone rings constantly, just trying to support her and help her. And really, I do a lot of listening, and I only chime in when needed and just try to encourage and let her know that there's another way, and she doesn't have to fall into the trap anymore. So, and I'm trying to keep humans alive, right? It's summer. school's out. I do homeschool, so I'm with my kids a lot, and so having them all summer and just going to the beach, going to our pool, seeing family.
Wow.
Good stuff.
Well, Jasmine, thank you so much for sharing your story and all the amazing work that you do, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Jasmine Grace Marino is the founder of Bags of Hope Ministries. They support women in Massachusetts who are survivors or still are, have been trafficked and are homeless. And you can find more information about her important work at yourcallradio.org. She's the author of The Diary of Jasmine Grace, and she shares her story in The Light. It is a short documentary from today's other guest, Mimi Chakarova. Please, I hope you can check out her series of short films, Still I Rise. They are about a wide range of incredible people overcoming adversity, and you can watch those films at yourcallradio.org. Mimi, as always, thank you for your great work. It's
thank
always
you,
great
Ruth.
To have you on.
Always happy to be here.
Thank you so much. And thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show. Laura has been with us for the past year and a half, or maybe more. The time is just flying. And we are sad to report that today is her last day, but we are very excited about her next adventure. Laura produced on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Producing three shows a week, right in a row, is a lot of work, and she met every deadline and always went the extra mile to find the best guests. Laura also did an incredible job producing our series Here, Histories of Exclusion and Resistance, which focused on the connections between Japanese-American internment during World War II and today's civil liberties violations. Thank you, Laura. We will miss you. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.